Well, Jeffrey, I know that there was confusion about the text, but even more so is that I gave the wrong text as it was. It should have been chapter 30, not chapter 31. And so it's all messed up, thanks to me. In 1938, somewhere around Halloween, Orson Welles narrated a drama by H.G. Wells, and it was entitled War of the Worlds. Now, there's very few of you that were alive at that time that heard that. But as they were in the CBS studio broadcasting all of that, they were completely unaware of the panic that that program created across the United States. And the interesting thing is that they were going through this drama, and then pretty soon policemen started showing up at the studio. But they still didn't pay much attention. They continued with the drama. And pretty soon, the studio was packed with police officers. None of them knew why this was taking place. And even after the broadcast, Orson Welles went to another studio and began preparing for another broadcast. People became quite frightened because they understood that aliens from another world was invading our world, and their sole purpose for being here was to destroy the human race. Now, understand, 1938, that was just shortly before the beginning of World War II. And so a lot of people were already conditioned mentally to accept this as a truth. Well, obviously, it was false. It was a false belief that aliens from another world come to our world to destroy the human race. The Bible clearly states that evil exists, even to the point that though we don't believe that children are born in sin, that's a false teaching. Nonetheless, it seems that it is inherent for us to not be good. In other words, we are inclined to do evil rather than to do good. Now, I know that there are some that would argue with that, but trust me, you're on the losing side, because I said so. You would like to believe that people are inherently good, but that's not true. Now, we can choose to believe about this concept of evil versus good. We could choose to believe it, or we could choose to ignore it. That's our choice here. There is a conflict between good and evil that will not end until Jesus brings an end to this world. In our passage, Luke chapter 11, verses 14 to 23, The opposition and animosity towards Jesus is escalating. He drives out a demon. And they say, well, he drives out the demon by the power of Beelzebul. Well, this guy is the Lord of the Flies. It's a kind of a twist on the name of the Old Testament. But in reality, this is Satan. When they talk about Beelzebul, they're talking about Satan. Now, what's interesting here is the fact that in spite of all the miracles that Jesus had performed for the people, it is the people that are turning on him. And they're making the accusations. They refuse to believe that Jesus had the power to drive out the demons. But you know what's interesting about that? The demons believed it. The demons believed that Jesus had the power. The demons believed that Jesus would send them to hell. The demons would believe, and they did believe, that Jesus is the superior power to Satan. As we look at this text, I just want us to gather some things from it, and I hope that will be helpful for us. And the first thing is that Satan is a real person. We need to understand that Satan is not a myth. And I know that there are those in our world that are trying to convince people, and maybe they've even become even more so vocal, that Satan being a real individual, and of course they describe him as this dragon with the tail and the fork and in a red suit and so on and so forth, that this guy really does not exist. And the reason is because as far as they're concerned, there's no such thing as right and wrong. That is, unless it affects them. If it affects their thinking of what's right and what's wrong, then they believe that there is a right and a wrong. He does not fit, oftentimes, our thinking on the subject of right and wrong, good and evil. And that all truth is subjective. And that we are the arbiters of what is true and what is not. And I'm sure you've heard the statement, what is true for me is true for me, whether you believe it's true or not. And so an individual goes through life whistling Dixie, thinking that he's okay because he's the one that's going to determine what's right and what's wrong in his life. The thing of it is, we need to take Satan seriously. First of all, take him seriously. He's a created being. Paul would write in Colossians chapter 1 and verse 16, "For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominion or rulers or his authorities, all things have been created through him and for him." Now I know that there are people that want to believe that Satan has the same attributes of God. He doesn't. If he had the same attributes of God, then he would be God. And he's not. Satan is still under the power of God. And we say, well, he's the prince of this world. This is his kingdom. This is what you see. And he's got all power and so on and so forth. Listen. Satan doesn't have any power that God didn't give him. He is still subject to God, whether he likes it or whether he doesn't. Whether he wants to admit it or whether he doesn't. Whether we want to admit it or whether we don't. He is not God. He has not got the same attributes of God. And what is also interesting is that Satan dwelt in God's presence. Was he an angel? 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. Peter writes, God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. So there are angels who were in the presence of God who sinned, and God says, that's where you're headed. And he goes and he sends them there. That's their destruction. The prophet Ezekiel speaks of the one influencing the king of Tyre in chapter 28, Ezekiel 28, verses 15 through 17. Talks about how he was in the garden, he was beautiful, and so on and so forth. And isn't it interesting that Satan, who was in the presence of God, committed sin? And you've got to ask the question, how in the world of common sense could you be so stupid? Here you are in the presence of your Creator and you sin against Him. Are you stupid? Well, apparently so, because they sinned. Satan sinned. They all sinned. But what's interesting, too, is that Satan has access to God. Job chapter 1, verses 6 through 12, chapter 2, verses 1 to 6. This is a strange conversation that takes place between God and Satan. And I know that there's a lot of questions that emerge from that, which you can never find an answer for. For instance, what was he doing there? How did he get there? What is his purpose for being there? And does this conversation still go on? A lot of those questions cannot be answered. But he could communicate. He came into God's presence. But notice that in spite of the fact that he comes into God's presence, his status does not change any. He's still doomed to hell. Satan's appearances are deceiving. I have to tell you, I have no idea as to his personal appearance. He's a spirit being. I know in the garden he appeared as a snake. But I decided I would turn to my computer, type in Satan, and see what came up. And all I could say was, wow, these are a lot of images. And what was interesting was that almost all of them were red. And they were grotesque figures that if you saw that coming at you, you could not get out of there fast enough. You would run as if you had a tiger right behind you chasing you. So let me say this. You can go to the internet, you can see all of the figures that they say this is what Satan looks like, and then you could just write delete. Because that's not what he looks like. And you know why I know he doesn't look like that? For one reason. He could never influence you looking like that. He'd scare the dogs. That's how bad these figures are. But somehow, we have created our own image of Satan. Whether it's through the internet, the television, movies, teachers, books, they're all sources from which we get our view of Satan. The fact is, Satan is real, and we need to be alert. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. And what he looks like is immaterial. And the reason it's immaterial is because you'd never recognize him. You'd never know it was Satan that was standing in front of you. Could be a nice, handsome gentleman in a two-piece suit, hair combed back, eyes penetrating, handsome, 6'2", 180, tall, dark, and handsome. Or they could be 5'10", blonde, wearing spike heels, hair flowing down, eyes looking at you with all of the lust and goodness that she could muster. You say, well, that's not Satan. How do you know? How do you know? Because Satan can make himself appear any way he wants to make himself appear. And that's why so many people have been captivated. Those who have known the name of Jesus Christ, those who have given their life to God, there they are walking off into some kind of a strange la-la land, not knowing and not recognizing they're being led by the nose by Satan. But you see, we all think that because we're Christians and we sit at church on Sunday morning and we've got this all down, we read our Bible, Satan will never touch us. No, I won't say that. That is just not true. That's not true at all. This guy wants to destroy your marriage. He wants to destroy your family. He wants to destroy your life. He wants to destroy the relationships that you've enjoyed. Let me say this. There is not one good thing in Satan. Some people have said, you know, all my friends are going to hell. That's where I want to go to. Are you stupid? My mother used to say, well, if all your friends walk off the cliff, you going to follow them? Well, I always thought that was kind of a dumb statement. Of course I wouldn't follow them. Well, why, if all your friends are going to hell, you want to follow them? How dumb is that? You see? I mean, it's just so hard to understand the thinking of the human mind. But let me also say that the conflict is real. There is the confrontation. Jesus cast out the demon. But they refused to admit that it was by Jesus' power that demon was cast out. And so they deflect what is obvious to confuse the issue. And Jesus reads their minds and responds to them, showing, first of all, their lack of rationale. He said, a kingdom divided against itself will not stand. Now, let me say this. That statement is true whether Jesus said it or not. All right? There's a lot of things that are absolutely true that Jesus never said. But there's a lot of things that are absolutely true that Jesus did say. And some things are true because he did say them, but many things are true whether he said it or whether he didn't. And a divided kingdom cannot stand is one of those truisms that is, doesn't matter who says it, it's just a truism. You think about the Civil War that we had back in the 1860s and how even Abraham Lincoln in his Gettysburg Address talked about the fact that whether this nation or any nation can stand with this conflict. And I'm paraphrasing everything. But he also showed their inconsistency. What Jesus says is, if I cast out demons by Beelzebub, then who do you cast them out by? I mean, who's helping you out? You see, they're just totally inconsistent here. But then when people want to get rid of somebody, they don't have to worry about being consistent. If they want to destroy somebody, they don't have to worry about being consistent. Okay? This conflict is an eternal battle. And by that we mean it will continue till the time will be no more. We face this conflict every day. We get up in the morning, the conflict is there, it's real, and it's raging. And the problem is we could never find refuge from the warfare. We cannot find R&R. In other words, you're not going to be sent to a nice little sunshiny island somewhere and said, you know, tell you, here, take about 3 weeks of R&R. Just sit back and relax, enjoy the sunshine, swim a little bit. Just enjoy resting. There is none of that with this conflict. There is no R&R. It's just a constant battle each and every day of our life. And we say, you know what? I'm tired of this battle. So is everybody else. But the battle has to be continue to be fought. We still need to do the battle. We still need to do the engage the conflict. This conflict is designed to destroy God. We said in class this morning, Satan's goal is not to destroy you. That's not his goal. However, to reach his goal, that is the destruction of God, he's got to destroy you. And when you become a child of God, the battle intensifies. And that's why God gave us a church. That's why God gave us one another, to come together to be encouraged and to fight the battle and fight it with everything we've got. You see, with Job, was Satan really interested in Job? Read the story. Satan wasn't interested in Job. He says, let me at him. And when he's done, he'll curse you. God says, go for it. But you can't kill him. And so Satan goes after Job. And why is he after Job? Because he wants to get to God. And then you get into chapter 2. God says, well, have you seen my servant Job? Yeah, well, take your hand away from him, skin for skin, and he will curse you. Do what you want, but you cannot kill him. And so Satan goes after Job. And Job is the subject of some of the most horrendous things that could ever happen to an individual. But this is one thing I want you to know. This is one thing I want you to remember. This is one thing I don't want you to ever forget this. Job was unaware of the conversation between Satan and God. Sometimes I think we can have such tremendous crises in our life, and it just seems like it's about to break us. Do you ever think that there might have been a conversation between God and Satan with you being the subject? Have you considered my servant Judy? How she doesn't turn to the left or to the right? Have you considered my servant Bill Moe? Who doesn't turn to the left or to the right? But is faithful in all things? Have you considered my servant Tracy? Who doesn't turn to the left or to the right? And the next thing you know, you're in the midst of one of the worst conflicts of your life. And unaware and unbeknownst to you, Satan has got permission from God to test you. Test you and push you to the very limits of what you can stand. I have to tell you, when I look what happened to Job, I'm thinking, you know, where is this man's breaking point? Surely he's got a breaking point somewhere. But Satan couldn't find it. Satan didn't work. It didn't work for him. All of this is designed to destroy your faith. Satan brings about doubts and fears. And he places before you alternatives to serving God. What appears to be good and right just simply has a different agenda. The battle for your allegiance is real. It is relentless. Job refused to cave, and yet some still had caved. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verses 18 through 20. There where Paul talks about Hymenaeus and Alexander, who have made shipwreck of their faith. This conflict is extremely dangerous. We are fighting what we cannot see. Ephesians chapter 6. Our battle is not with flesh and blood, but with principalities, powers, heavenlies. Back in 1961, when I enlisted into the Marine Corps, you had 12 weeks of boot camp, and then you had 4 weeks of infantry training. Those 16 weeks that we spent in training was for the purpose of knowing how to do war in a conventional theater, such as World War II. We were sent to Vietnam. We landed on the beach at Vietnam. And suddenly, things did not look familiar. Who we were trained to fight was not there. The battle was fought against people that you had no idea was your enemy. Could be just a small boy. Could be a little girl who will throw a loaf of bread into the back of your truck, but inside it's got a hand grenade. It was one of those battles where the enemy would hit and then run. And thus we had an extremely difficult time trying to face the enemy. Paul says your enemy is not flesh and blood. It's not people. Let me go so far as to say this, folks. And our enemy is not ISIS. Our enemy is Satan. Now we need to make a real effort to understand that. You get in conflict with somebody that's a member of the church, and you don't understand why they're doing what they're doing, and you get angry with them, and you get frustrated with them, you remember your battle is not with flesh and blood. It's not them. It's Satan using them. And so I want us to understand that extremely dangerous, not only because we don't recognize the enemy, but the Bible says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verses 14 and 15 that Satan appears as an angel of light. And so do his servants. This is why we need to take the warning that came from the Apostle Peter when he says, be on the alert. The devil is looking for someone to devour. He's like a roaring lion going out there trying to find someone. Because you see, an individual who travels alone is subject for destruction. But here's the good part. The victory has been secured. Jesus said that when someone attacks the one guarding his house, and he is stronger than the one who's guarding his house, he overpowers him and takes the belongings. That's Jesus destroying Satan's work. That's what he's talking about. Jesus, by casting out demons, was destroying Satan's power. His kingdom was crumbling. And Jesus secured our victory by going to the cross. It was there that the penalty of sin was paid, and in his resurrection, the power of Satan was broken. Therefore, he has absolutely no power whatsoever to make me sin. We all face temptation. We face an abundance of temptation. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, Paul writes, for there is no temptation taking you but what is common to man, but God. And you always need to underline those words, but God. But God gives you a way of escape. He gives you the way of escape. And then when He provides that way of escape, you need to take it. David did not have to commit his sin by numbering the nations of Israel. God gave him a way of escape. Now, when it was in the person of Joab, Joab says, what are you doing? You don't need to do this. But David wouldn't listen. David didn't take the way of escape. Listen, folks, take the way of escape because you're not strong enough to deal with it. You don't have that power. Satan has no grounds to make accusations against me. He forever wants to remind us of our unworthiness. You're not worthy to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. And He loves it when we look back and we condemn ourselves. Do you find yourself doing that? Do you find yourself looking back and remembering the things that you did when you were a child? Do you remember? Do you look back and remember the things that you did as a teenager? Do you remember the things that you did as a young adult? Satan loves it when you do that. Because what happens when you do? You feel guilty. That's his way of accusing you and telling you that you're not worthy. You're nothing but a scumbag. And God has no use for you. He has no power to destroy me. Oh, he'd love to. He'd do everything in the world to destroy me. But I want to tell you something. Jesus Christ secured my future. When he secured my future, it was forever secured. And Satan has no way of dealing with it. And that Jesus Christ is for me, not against me. Romans chapter 8, verses 35 to 39. Satan is real. The conflict is real. And the victory has been secured. But the choice is ours. I want you to notice what Jesus says. You know, the thing about Jesus is he doesn't mince words. And I know that there are those that write commentaries and do, well, now you got to understand, he didn't really mean what he just said. Let me tell you something. Jesus meant exactly what he said. And he said in verse 23, "He who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters abroad." Two. There's no third option here. There's only two. You're either for Jesus or you're against him. You are either gathering for Jesus or you are working against him. Yeah, well, you know what? You know, I'm a pretty good guy and I got to tell you, I'm not doing all those things these jerks are doing out there. And I tell you, I know that everything is going to be just fine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just told my class, and let me tell you, if you were in my class, never, 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 never think for God. Jesus is clear. You're either with me or you're against me. You're either gathering with me or you're scattering abroad. You're either following me as a disciple or you're just nothing but a hypocrite. You're a jerk. You're a sinner. I didn't say that. That's found in Luke 13, verse 23. And so, if you've got an issue with that, take it up with Jesus. The passage that I really wanted him to read is Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 15 through 20. And at the end of that text, Moses tells the people, "Behold, I stand before you and give you life and death. Choose life. That's your choice. Choose life. Don't choose death. Choose life. You want to give yourself to Jesus Christ? You want to really become a disciple? I pray that you'll do that this morning. There's some way we can help you. Won't you come while Steve leads us in the song?